Welcome to Hey Siri, a podcast about psychology, relationships, and most importantly, piping hot tea. Sit down, take a sip, and remember to subscribe as resident pop culture expert Xochi and struggling PhD student Siri take you through the what, why, and how of relationship research and what that means for your non-scientifically researched relationships. All of this research is coming out all the time, but academic literature can be intimidating and difficult to connect to real life. So let us do it for you.
Siri will tell us all about what research is taking the psychology world by storm. On today's episode, she will tell us all about blending families. How does it affect your relationship? How does it affect your kids? What's the best way to go about it?
And after hearing the research on how to successfully blend a family, Xochi will tell Siri all about the hilarious and never exciting. Is that supposed to be never ending?
Nope. It's not exciting.
It's never exciting?
No, that's like a big through line of the show is that, like, they work at a store. It's not very exciting.
I didn't think of it that way. Of NBC's Superstore and the relationship between Amy and Jonah. Okay. So, before we make the Pop Culture Connect exciting, I'm going to talk about our Research Connect. So, I found an article from July 2022, called Blending Families, What Couples Should Know and Consider.
July 2022?
Yes.
Next month?
So sometimes they'll do preprints online, but it hasn't come out yet.
This is a sneak peek.
It's kind of a sneak peek. I know that sounds weird.
This research literally has not happened yet, and yet we're able to bring it to you here at the Hey Siri podcast.
See, that's what's nice, though, about publishing online now is, right, that the paper version of the journal has not come out yet, but we can read it online already. So,
it's exciting. Science is amazing. Technology is, we're in the future.
And it has been published online, and it will be published in the Journal of Family Research and Practice. Did I say it was by Curtis Fox? It was.
Good for him. I knew he could do it.
Yeah, he's a clinician, so I assume that his expertise is working with blended families.
I hope so.
So, one would hope. So, just to clarify what we're talking about when we say a blended family, the definition of this term is a family arrangement in which at least one of the parents brings to the union one child or more that is not the biological child or children of the new partner, or in which there are step-siblings or half-siblings brought to the new union of two persons in a marriage or consensual union. So basically just a marriage between two people where one or both already has children from another relationship.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that they can't have, like, I mean, so, right, this can mean that they then go on to have more children together, or they don't, and this is just their family.
Got it.
So, it's really important to study blended families and look at their outcomes and look at kind of the process of blending families, because current evidence indicates that up to 1 in 2 marriages end in divorce, and many divorced individuals go on to remarry.
Terrifying statistic.
Yeah, it's not great right now. And I should clarify that that is in the U.S. So marriages that create blended families are actually more likely to end than marriages that create a, quote, traditional family arrangement. And a lot of that is because of the unique challenges that they face on top of the, you know, challenges that traditional families face, and I'm like making air quotes here. So one of the big predictors of marital dissatisfaction in remarriages, and specifically remarriages that involve children, is role ambiguity. And that can be the result of poor co-parenting communication, role confusion regarding the parenting responsibilities of step-parents, and a relationship conflict that arises from all of these challenges.
I can definitely see that because I don't really know what the role, this is something that I was exploring recently while we were like doing research for this episode, and also I listened to a podcast recently. I don't really know the role of a step-parent, and of course it's different for every family, but you know, we always tend to put ourselves in these situations when we're imagining a hypothetical, because I don't have any step-parents, but if I was a step-parent, it's like, especially when in terms of, like, discipline and, you know, you're definitely an authority to the child and in the home, but, like, would you... If you need to punish them, like, depending on how long you know them, do you just, like, go get their parent? Be like, look what your child did?
So I think, no, that's a really good question. And I think a lot of it depends on the ages of the children.
Right.
So if you come into a marriage and the child is, let's say there's just one, but the child is, like, 3, right? It's going to be, I think you'd probably take on more of a parenting role than if you come into a marriage where the child is 17. Right. And in that case, I actually don't know if you would ever discipline them, right? Because, like, it doesn't make as much sense versus if you have a child that's 3, they're going to be in your house until they're 18, like, and they're not necessarily going to remember a world without you.
Right. You have a role in their upbringing.
Right. Yes.
Rather than you're coming in at a certain point in their upbringing.
Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, right, they may not think of you necessarily as mom or dad like they would if you come in when they were 3, but they think of you as, okay, this is, you know, like my dad's wife,
right,
or my dad's husband. And it doesn't mean that that's not like a fulfilling and loving relationship, but it's definitely not like the same as like a parental relationship.
Right. And honestly, like, I don't know, if a 13 to 18 year old like did something annoying in front of me, I'd just be like, I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah.
You're like a person now, you can understand why that's fucked up, correct? Okay.
Well, we'll get in. That's so interesting, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So we talked about like the predictors of marital dissatisfaction, but you know, research shows that when couples are able to communicate constructively and families are able to establish sort of concrete responsibilities and rights and roles of all the family members, then they will report positive marital outcomes. So it really comes down to this, like, figuring out your family and how it's going to work in an open way. And
love that.
Another reason blended families may experience more negative outcomes than other types of families is just the stigma around remarriage and step-parents. And like, thinking about that, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, if you look at like Disney movies,
yep,
step-parents are not portrayed positively. And those in particular, I was thinking about those because I'm like, oh, those are the things that, like, people watch when they're a kid.
That makes sense.
It can influence maybe their views, but there's stigma everywhere. And that stigma, they said, the author said that could create negative appraisals within the family because of those kind of, like, negative representations that they have.
Right. If anyone needs positive representation of step-parents, just watch Juno.
I was about to say, so blended families are becoming more common, and this wasn't explicitly mentioned, but I think we're seeing more blended families in media as well.
Definitely.
And so, like, nowadays there are more role models for functioning, and I think that, like, there's less stigma because of that, and so that's kind of, like, a really positive thing recently. But, like, if you go, right, if you look at kind of just, like, the very beginning, right, blended families, the beginning of the couple relationship is really different than the beginning of couple relationships in, you know, quote-unquote traditional families. So if you think of what we think of as, like, traditional path to marriage, it's like, okay, the couple meets, they get to know each other, they get married, and then they live together for a period of time, and they have that kind of, like, time together before they have kids. And then they're both present in the child's life from the beginning. But with blended families, you know, you start the relationship, you both have children, so you're both bringing those individuals in right away. Maybe not right away, because you don't always want to, like, immediately introduce your children to your new partner.
Right.
But it's, like, so much faster. And then you're coming into the lives of children who are, you know, maybe older, and you haven't seen them grown up, and you don't know them. It's just a very different situation. And then also, you know, children in blended families, they didn't choose their parents' partner.
Yeah.
Like, the parent made that choice. So they're kind of pushed into it. Like, they didn't choose this. And so that can lead to just negative responses just because of kind of that, like, lack of control, lack of agency. Mm-hmm. And so the author says that to promote positive early adjustment, parents in blended families should be especially aware and careful to spend an equal amount of time with each new family member. Mm-hmm. So with their biological children, with the stepchildren, and then also making sure to prioritize time with their romantic partner alone to solidify the spousal bond, because you need to have that kind of, that bond that's solid. You need to know them. You need to have a solid marriage. That's kind of really important when it comes to positive co-parenting of all of the children.
Yeah, and that makes sense because there's so many, like, I mean, kids are confused and they are insecure, especially when they are like 12 to mm-hmm. whatever age. So, like, you know, even before that, like, I mean, kids get jealous of their younger siblings, even if it's like a biological family, quote unquote, a biological family,
like a nuclear.
So how much harder? Yeah, how much harder would it, I don't want to say traditional. Well, I guess I mean, well,
it is. I think we can say traditional, and I think that's a good, that's an accurate representation.
Yeah. Okay. Good. You know, with all that jealousy and insecurity happening around, that I mean, like, it's so easy to imagine. There's this other little kid, and you're like, ah, that's cool, and you got to choose that one, and it comes with a new wife. So you're not going to forget about me, right?
Right. Yeah.
This is not going to change our relationship. It's,
No, exactly. And so, I mean, one thing that the author brought up, right, is that, like, the complexity of the interrelationships in blended families, that in itself can be a challenge. And they kind of went through, so they, like, you know, talked about kind of what the author called the subsystems within families. And they said, you know, within a nuclear family, there's really just one subsystem when it comes to, or I guess there would be two, right? Okay, so there's the couple, and then there's parent-child relationships. But in blended families, there's five, because you have the former spouse subsystem, you have the remarried couple subsystem, the parent-child subsystems, the sibling subsystems with the step-siblings and half-siblings, the mother and stepmother and father and stepfather systems. And then what they didn't mention, but I think is like a really real possibility, right, is if you have multiple previous marriages and children from multiple previous marriages, that just adds more of these kind of complex subsystems.
Weddings are huge.
Seriously. And then beyond that, like really in this early adjustment period, a lot of times the parents have these like expectations where it's just like, yeah, like we love each other and I love my kids and they know that I love them, and you know, maybe they're even happy about this new relationship, and so it's going to be like just a super smooth transition into this new family unit, and it's all going to be great. But it's like any transition has challenges, even if everyone's happy about it. And just having these unrealistic expectations can negatively affect relationship satisfaction, can cause conflict, because you're expecting things that really cannot be, you have these expectations that just can't be met. And so you're going into these high level of expectations, and when the real circumstances don't meet those expectations, you're unhappy. Whereas if you went into it with kind of these realistic expectations, and you knew that there were maybe going to be challenges, then you might not experience the same dissatisfaction.
We were just talking recently, not even on the podcast, about how I was like, I don't know how much I appreciate the almost, not really romantic, but just very idealistic, very rose-colored representation that I keep randomly seeing in a lot of different pieces of media, where it's like, okay, these blended families are a little too seamless.
Yeah.
This is, and I know some incredibly well-blended, seamless, functional blended families. Mm-hmm. And even then, when sometimes you see these representations, the most recent one I can think of is the girl from Plainville for some reason. But
right,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, it's a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, nuclear families have their struggles and issues, like, every family, and then when you add on these kind of additional circumstances, Right. It's kind of ridiculous to expect that it's just going to be like all happy all the time. Even just like moving people in together, there's going to be like, because each family has their family culture. And so each parent is going to have created that family culture, and then you're trying to merge the family cultures, even if it's something as like simple as like one of the families is just taking a lot of time in the bathroom, and that's not how the other family does it. Could like, you know,
Right.
that's or wake up times.
Even like, I don't know. The idea of living in houses and blending a family like makes me nervous as someone who keeps like half an eye on the housing market, where I'm like, okay, whose house are we moving into? Who's gonna feel
Oh,
like it's not
yeah.
fair that we lost one of the houses, or they really put a lot into their house, or which one's worth more, or which one's worth more sentimentally if it was left to you in a will or something? Or like, do you buy a new house? How, like,
I'm so curious, actually, now that you've said that, I'm curious about that issue. Like, what percentage of blended families just buy a new house? What percentage of blended families move into mom's house or dad's house? Or if there's like two moms or two dads, right? Like, but like, how do they decide?
Yeah, that's crazy. And it's like, what if it's like, what if you only have one kid and you bought a house for your one kid and then you marry someone with four kids? And it's like, all of a sudden, you need a house for five kids and two parents. That's a much bigger house. Ugh, I just don't know.
This is so funny because I listen, you know that I listen to like a podcast by one of the teen moms. And she
Yeah.
was saying, because she has four
Is that
boys.
Farrah that you listen to?
Oh, God, no. No,
Oh, you hate
Kale.
Farrah. We hate
We
Farrah.
hate Farrah. She's
We love
a
Kale.
lunatic. We don't love Kale. She's a lunatic in a different way, but she's entertaining.
We appreciate Kale.
Because she's not dumb. Yeah. But she was talking, so she has four boys from three dads. And so, you know. With that, right, which I didn't even consider, but she has her own custody schedule, right? And so blended families might have their own
Right.
custody schedules. Not all of her boys go to their dads at the same time. But she said, so she has a house, and she said that if she ever got married again, regardless of whether it was someone with kids or without kids, she would never move in with them. They would just have their own houses because she has her routine and it's her house, and like that's kind of.
I mean, once you get that rhythm
Yeah.
down, that's so complicated. You can't just disrupt that
Right.
for so many reasons.
But, like, on the other hand, and, like, right, she could change her mind or whatever. But, like, on the other hand, it's not the same. Like, we've talked about couples living separately before. And we've talked about the challenges for the kids. And I just feel like it would be really difficult. With a blended family, if you were married to someone, if you married someone else who also had children, to create specifically those sibling relationships when they live in different houses, different households.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just don't see that happening.
That just, I mean, I wouldn't feel like your sibling if
Right.
that's just, I mean, they
Maybe
could be like a
cousins,
friend.
but like.
Yeah, a cousin. That's a good one.
And that's so funny because it actually came up with, like, you know, the Sister Wives family?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Because. When the oldest kids were young, all of the wives lived in the same house, and they each had like separate apartments, but like it was all the same house. And one mom took care of all the kids, the other moms worked. And so the oldest siblings are like very tight, like very tight. And then when they, over the years, the family eventually moved into separate houses, and the younger children. They don't have like sibling relationships with each other from the different moms. And so like it's very strange because you've got these older siblings where they're all siblings from the different moms, and then you've got the younger siblings which have a totally different experience.
That's so sad.
Yeah, well, one of the moms just left. Did you hear
Oh.
about that?
No, because the more I hear, and even this, I mean, this just proved to be true. The more I hear about the sister wives, the more depressing it gets.
Oh, it's all bad. And the thing is, like, she left because she cared. The other sister wives are still there. One of them is like the favorite. So he spends all of his time with her. And the other two sister wives, they're just doing their own thing. Like, they don't care enough to get like divorced. They're like, it's fine if you never visit me. Like, I got my own thing going.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's so icky.
Okay. Going back to what we're talking about. So yep, there's right, the early adjustment is gonna be hard. That transition's gonna be hard. And even if you go into the relationship, right, a lot of like step parents think, oh, but I'm going into this, like, I love them and I'm like, I have kindness, like, and I'm like giving everyone grace. So like this is gonna be fine. But even with that, and like he starts the article by saying like basically like love is not enough to sustain a relationship,
Yeah.
which is so true.
I mean, that's true for every relationship.
Yeah, but I think people think that like, oh, all you need is love, and it's like, no.
No, you need a plan. You need structure.
You need good timing,
You need a foundation.
some luck, a foundation, people to know and communicate with each other, an awareness. Like, there's so much that goes into this, right? So just going into it with love is not enough. And like even just taking, like we talked about before, taking on parenting roles can be really confusing and frustrating. And so actually the author suggests that actually the first parenting task that a step-parent takes on should just be building alliances with their stepchildren. Like building that relationship and building that, like, I don't want to say it this way, but like before you step into a discipline role at all, you should get to know them, and there should be like a, I want to know you, and I want to have a relationship with you, and let's go out for ice cream, like that kind of thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then the last thing that the author talks about is how, like, building this new family structure takes time, and a lot of times, step parents and like biological, the couple tries to move things too quickly because they feel ready. And he basically says like don't push anything. Like you
Right.
need to take it slow. Like even if that means that it's not going at the pace that you want, like take it slow. And so he says, you know, parents and children in blended families need to be flexible. And they need to be able to pivot, and they need to be able to slow down if needed. Like even if like, you know, if you think, okay, we're gonna move in together, like this is great. If there's like any hesitation or there's like some struggle going on, like stop and fix it before you move to the next step. And, you know, on top of that, a big part of that is communication, setting boundaries. I mean, he kind of ends, and he says this throughout the article that if you are doing all these things and you're going into it with realistic expectations, knowing that this is going to be a process, blended families can be joyful and rewarding and close and functional as long as you understand that they take time and patience. So that was his conclusion.
That's good.
Yeah, so I just want to clarify this. This was a review, this is not a study. So all of this, like throughout the article, was backed up with citations, and he referenced a lot of research throughout.
So we're kosher.
We're good. This was not just his opinion based on like his clinical practice. This was actually like,
Like my experience with my
yeah, no,
stepdad.
exactly. No, so yeah, I should say like there's nothing wrong with referencing clinical, like your own experience as a clinician, but like he had that, and then he also had all of this research. Yeah, 'cause he wasn't just talking about like, yeah, so my stepdad.
Oh my goodness. Well, once again, and I'm so happy that this happens so often, I think our pop culture connect meets up pretty dang close to the research.
Ooh.
I'm excited to talk about it.
That makes me happy.
Except a few things where I'm like, oh, okay, now we're getting. All right, guys. So, Superstore is an American workplace sitcom that aired on NBC from November 30th, 2015 to March 25th, 2021. The series was created by Justin Spitzer, who served as an executive producer for 4 seasons. It starred America Ferrera as Amy Sosa and Ben Feldman as Jonah Sims, and it follows a group of employees working at Cloud Nine, a fictional big box chain store that's like pretty reminiscent of Walmart, I'd say, in St. Louis, Missouri. I'd say they're pretty closely based on Walmart. The supporting cast includes Lauren Ash as Dina Fox, Colton Dunn as Garrett McNeil, Nico Santos as Mateo Liwanag, Nicole Sakura as Cheyenne Lee, Mark McKinney as Glenn Sturgis and Kaliko Kauai as Sandra Kalewu Kalani. I really hope I pronounced all of those correctly. Kaliko Kauai. My bad, girl. Also, just to put in, this series is so good.
It's really good.
And I also think it's like one of those shows where not enough people saw it, but then I keep finding out that like a lot of people saw it, and I'm like, how are you not talking about it right now? Because it's so good.
Okay, I will say though, sometimes I'll like turn on the TV to like go to bed at night when I'm like going to bed, and I cannot put this show on because I have like I can't stand embarrassment. Like I cannot watch something embarrassing happen. Like I just have to fast forward, and this show has so many things happen in it that are just so cringe inducing for me that like I can't do it.
It can get very uncomfortable, and it can also get pretty disturbing. Like, if you... some of the things... I mean, several people die over the course of this show.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, characters. I mean, one of them wasn't really... You know, he was just some dude. Yeah. But, like, no, there were characters who died.
Well, but there was that one character... Okay, I don't even want to spoil it. Just
there
in
was
case
a, someone watches there was a character. Well, we're going to spoil the entire show. But also, there's a character who literally like gets put into a coma and then is just like non-functional after that for several years, and he's never the same.
Right. Oh god, I like completely forgot
about that. He's never the same. It's insane. Also, there's one of the characters is a murderer. Canonically,
yeah.
One of the supporting cast. Like, anyway. It's an insane show. It's very funny. When you put all the bad things right next to each other, it seems like it's not funny. It's very funny.
That's part of the fun, though. Like, sorry, I'm just like, my typing, if you hear it, is I'm telling Pace to go get my cupcakes. They're out the door. It's very exciting. It's important. But no, I think that's one of the fun things about it, though, is like, it gets so out of control.
It's wacky.
Yeah.
And it's also so accurate in its depiction of what it's like to work in customer service. Especially when they get to the COVID year. Like, it's the most accurate I've seen.
Yeah.
So who is Amy Sosa? And yes, I say Sosa, and I'll address it now. In our Happy Endings episode, I got mad because they listed Jane's name as Jane Williams. When it's actually canonically mm-hmm. Jane Kirkovich Williams, and she mostly referred to herself as Kirkovich, a Kirkovich sister, or Kirkovich, like, Kirkovich, her name.
Yeah.
I'm once again angry, because Amy's name is listed as Amy Sims.
Really? That never happened.
Well, they do get married.
But it's never confirmed that she took his name.
That's the thing! And I know that she took her first husband's name, and she went by Amy Dumanowski while she was married to Adam, but she was 19.
Yeah.
So I can't, like, I don't have too much trouble imagining that she just thought that that's what she's supposed to do.
Right.
And I haven't told you anything about the character, but I just don't think that after the character development that we saw Amy go through, and the point that she's at in her life, that she would get rid of Sosa and fully change her name to Sims.
Right.
Not even a hyphen? I don't believe that.
Yeah. If she took his name at all, like...
Exactly. I don't think she even would. And I don't think he would expect her to. I think, you know what? Knowing what we know of Jonah, he would change his name to Sosa.
Yeah, probably. Because it would be like a virtue signal.
It would be, but it would also, like, I mean, that's happening more, and, like, there are... You know, what connection does he have to his family name? We meet his family later, and it's not a good family
situation. I don't know. It's not that it wasn't.
And she's very close with her good, family.
But
I mean, Pace took your last name.
Yeah.
Our last name. I feel closer to him now. So, but like, you know, I think that Jonah would be similar to Pace in that he's like, oh, I'll just take your name.
Right.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Especially considering her history.
Exactly. Oh my, and his history. I think the whole thing is so dumb that they would say that her name is Amy Sims. No, it's not.
It's dumb.
It's Amy and Jonah Sosa. But anyway, Amy is a hardworking, determined, intelligent, and stubborn person. She begins the series as Cloud9's floor supervisor and is later promoted to assistant manager. And then at some point, she becomes the manager of Cloud9, store 1217, the one that they all work at, before transferring to a position in the corporate office in California. I don't remember what that role was. I feel like it was something mildly offensive.
I have no idea. I don't know anything about corporate.
I know that it had diversity in the title, and that's why I'm just assuming it was a little bit offensive. Anyway, but I also need to read, speaking of maybe is offensive, I need to tell you a direct quote from her character bio on the official website, because I cannot understand why they phrased it this way. This is the exact quote. Of Honduran descent, she became pregnant with her daughter Emma in high school and was married to her baby's father, Adam, shortly after.
Yeah, that's a weird sentence to meld together.
Why would you put it in that order? Why is that? Why are these two facts connected to each other?
So, like, I sympathize because I feel like I spend a lot of my time writing and trying to figure out how to mix in this work. And that's something that I'd probably put in a first draft. And then, like, my advisor would be like, this doesn't make sense. Why did you merge these two things? And I think it's literally that they just didn't have a proofreader and they didn't know, like, they didn't, it would just be like a sentence of like, she is of Honduran descent. She became pregnant. And they were like, oh, okay, let me just merge these sentences. But it's like, so they're completely funny. Unconnected ideas.
Oh man, I just saw that and I was like, what? So Amy had two kids with Adam, Emma during their marriage and Parker prior to their divorce, but Amy found out when they were already separated. So we find out in the first season that Amy was accepted into a good college, but didn't go because of the pregnancy, and she had to work to support her family. Mm-hmm. Who is Jonah Sims? Nay Sims. Currently Jonah Sosa. Jonah is an optimistic and helpful person who always tries to find the, quote, moments of beauty in life, but can at times be a little privileged and immature due to his upbringing by wealthy and disconnected parents. He starts the series as a recent college dropout who's looking for his next adventure in life and ends up at Cloud9 and a job in retail pretty accidentally. We learn during the series that Jonah had lied to his parents about dropping out of business school and told them that he dropped out to attend medical school. And by the time we meet his parents, they think he's in his third year of studying hematology and are devastated when they find out he's actually working at Cloud9 as a floor supervisor. And because of this, which we'll talk about more later, and many more situations that we'll also talk about later, Jonah has a strained relationship with his family at best.
Honestly, though, like,
by the end of the series, I think he truly only has a relationship with his mother. But that's neither here nor there.
But to be real, though, I feel like, okay, 3 years, like, okay, so I live in a different state than you. Like, you don't know if I actually go to school. I mean, I have, like, my school ID, but that guy could be anything. Like, right? I'm, like, telling you what's happening.
You tell me about your students and your grading.
Yeah, but what if I'm just, like, a really good liar, right? Like, I could be making that stuff up. Although some, like,
that would be literally insane.
I know. I feel like some stories in real life are so ridiculous that it doesn't even make sense to make them up, but, like,
we also learn later from Jonah, like, okay, you talk to us every single day.
Yeah.
It would take most of your time. You'd have to practically be a PhD student to lie this much and at this level about being a PhD student, but Jonah only sees his family, like, maybe once a year. They are not very close.
That's true.
They ask him how he's doing, he gives them a brief update, and they say, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's true. And to be clear, I don't talk to you about grades, I just want to make that clear.
Yes, she does.
Students, if you're listening to this, Zochi does not know any of your grades, I promise.
I know who's failing. I do. Looking at you, Michaela. I know your grade.
Oh my god, don't say that. What if there's a Michaela in my class?
Looking at you, Josh. I know your grade. I'm just saying names.
Oh my god.
So how did they get together? Everyone's favorite part. It took a really long time in this show. I mean, relatively.
So long. Oh my god.
Yeah, it was complicated. So Jonah pretty much immediately has a crush on Amy after he humiliated himself in front of her on his very first day, and then he continues to do that. So he
humiliates himself the rest of the series.
It's true, but in this first episode, I mean, honestly, even as the audience, you're like, Jonah, what the fuck? So he knocks down two huge displays of products, He incorrectly prices all electronics as 25 cents. He mistakes Amy as another floor worker and condescends both the other workers and the job that she is his superior at.
He's not good at his job.
No, he's awful. And so, you know, because of all those things, Amy's not his biggest fan. She's worked at Cloud9 for almost a decade. I think actually maybe I may be getting that number wrong. She may have worked there for longer than that. At some point in the series, she celebrates her 15th year working there. So she's experiencing the burnout and the bitterness that affects retail workers and tells Jonah as much when he gets a little too starry-eyed. At one point telling him, quote, "Tomorrow is going to be just like today, and I know that because today was just like yesterday." So the never exciting superstore.
Yeah, that's true.
But she starts to appreciate Jonah's unique charm, especially after a hard shift for her, fills the store's ceiling with glow-in-the-dark stars to make up for his mistakes and to show her that every day can be different and beautiful. I don't know, it was a cute moment. It's something like, I don't know, just a bunch of little glow-in-the-dark stars, but it's like he went all the way up there. There were so many of them. It was really nice. And Jonah at this point doesn't know that Amy is married because employees aren't allowed to wear jewelry at work, including wedding rings, which is something that Cheyenne actually mentions a little earlier in this, like in the first episode, I think, as foreshadowing, where she's like, "Oh, the ring is so beautiful. I wish I could wear it at work." A few episodes later, Jonah finds out that Amy has a daughter and tells her how much that he admires single moms.
Oh my God. Just go ahead and make that assumption. That's fine.
Amy corrects him that she is actually married, and after Jonah successfully puts his foot in his mouth, they move on. There aren't a lot of direct references or development of their romantic relationship in the first season. Obviously, Amy's married. She's a good person. But they do get closer as friends. Jonah hooks up with a reporter in the earliest episode. Amy's married. They're not really taking anything seriously. They bond over hijinks and accidentally destroy the warehouse at one point. And when Amy needs to bring her daughter into work due to a scheduling issue, Jonah watches her when Amy is busy and also consequently accidentally helped her through her first period. So that's not great.
He doesn't do a great job.
I was like, he was grabbing a lot of things, and I was like, you need one thing, maybe two things at the most. And it's pretty obvious what those things are because you're an adult. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess he only has brothers, but like, really? You've had girlfriends,
He doesn't pay
right?
attention.
It's so weird to me that he was just so, maybe he was just panicking, but I was like, bro, this is not that big of a deal.
Yeah, there's that like panic mindset of like, let me just get everything.
Towards the end of the first season, Amy and Jonah start confiding in each other. Jonah confesses to Amy that he had flunked out of business school and is feeling like a failure and lost in life. And Amy tells Jonah that although she doesn't regret getting married so young, she isn't happy in her marriage. Amy and Jonah also organize a haphazard strike in between seasons 1 and 2 after their manager Glenn is fired for giving their coworker Cheyenne 4 weeks of paid leave after she gives birth in the store. So that took up a lot of time. So they didn't have a lot of time to like figure these confessions out after that happened. A lot goes on in this show towards the back half of the seasons, like all at once. It's constantly intense. But the first half of the season is always really chill. In the beginning of season 2, we see more of Adam and his relationship and interactions with Amy. He even like works at the store as a seasonal worker for a few weeks. He was even worse than Jonah at his job, and that is saying something because, as we previously mentioned, Jonah's not good at it. And we also learn that he's pretty deadbeat as a husband and dad. He's constantly chasing failed business ventures, causing him to financially depend on Amy and, you know, be a financial drain in some cases. And Amy is also the primary child care of their child, Emma. She's also the breadwinner. She makes the she they're working on they're living on her sole income, and she's taking community college courses while she's working full time, supporting her family. Jonah is one of the few people who stands up for Amy and encourages her to pursue her education, take time for herself, and even encourages Adam to be more present in their marriage. He never talks down on Adam, which I find very respectful because it's really easy to do. Like, so easy. Everything about this dude. Oh my God. I hate Adam. And he never tells Amy what she should do or whether or not she and Adam should separate, just that she's a smart and capable person who knows what's best for her and her family, which is great. We love that. Yeah. Very respectful. Well, Adam tells Amy that community college, just as an example, because it's so stark. While Adam tells Amy that community college is basically an expensive hobby and comparing it to his real-time grill videos that he makes on YouTube, Jonah tells her that he admires her work ethic and that he couldn't even make it through his college when he was a full-time student, let alone also working full-time and being a mom.
The thing, though, is, like, hobbies are supposed to be fun, and college is difficult. Yeah. I'll say that.
I really don't like Adam.
That's ridiculous. No.
We find out in this season that Jonah has a considerable amount of student debt and virtually no marketable skills or experience due to his habit of picking up jobs or school and leaving on a whim. Amy helps Jonah learn how to be more practical and take personal accountability, as well as helping him take life more seriously. And she's actually the reason that he finds out that he was on a deferment at first from his school. He wasn't actually dropped out. And then she encourages him to check the status of that. And he finds out that his deferment has ended and he has no chance of an extension. And so Amy's like, okay. He's like freaking out because that was, you know, his whole thing, his whole plan. And she's like, you know what? It's done. We're just gonna figure it out from this point because this is where we're at.
Yeah, and even if, like, he was never going to go back, right, there was that, like, okay, but, like, this is a possibility.
That security in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a good moment to have Amy there for. She's a good person to talk to about stuff like that. In the episode Glenn's Kids, we meet most of Glenn's foster children. Glenn is their manager. Jonah and Glenn's daughter, Kristen, start flirting and date for a few episodes before breaking up. It wasn't really a big thing. Mm. She was way too cool for him. I can't remember who played her, but she was also on New Girl, and she was so fun. I love her. Towards the end of this season, Amy announces that she and Adam have separated and are getting divorced. In the same show, Jonah accidentally calls Amy sexy and spends the rest of the episode trying to convince everyone that it's a perfectly normal compliment. He does not succeed, because it's not. But every storyline in this episode is quickly forgotten about when a tornado hits the store and everyone rushes to find safety. Amy and Jonah end up under the same counter, and while Cloud9 is being destroyed around them, they kiss.
I just feel like I would be focusing on other things. Like the tornado.
Don't know what happened there. The tornado ends, everyone emerges miraculously uninjured, and while everyone is gathering their bearings in the parking lot, Jonah sees Amy get picked up by Adam and Emma. After Amy assures Emma that she's okay, Adam tells her they were both so worried about her and gives her a long hug. They all go home together, and the episode ends with Jonah and the rest of the employees in the parking lot.
Awkward.
Very awkward. But it's like, okay, yes, she and Adam are separated. When you've been married to someone since you were 19, exactly. You have a child with them, and you hear that their store was just hit by, like, destroyed by a tornado, like,
wait, a separation doesn't really
mean
them.
Yeah, a separation doesn't mean anything in that moment. Like, you have to go rush and see them and then take them home and make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
The third season starts with Amy and Jonah awkwardly acknowledging their kiss and agreeing that it was a random, adrenaline-filled moment that didn't actually mean anything. Although Jonah seems put off by this decision. But he also knows that Amy and Adam have still decided to stay separated, even though, you know, they spent that night together after the tornado, and they were like, it was just, you know, we still care about each other.
Yeah.
He believes that Amy is simply not interested in him, married or not, and he starts pursuing other relationships and signs up for online dating. During the episode Sal's Dead, Amy takes Jonah's phone so she can scroll through his dating profile, and while he's off working, she's still scrolling through it, and she accidentally matches with their coworker, Kelly, while Jonah is working on the floor. She panics and tries to steal Kelly's phone to delete the notification before she can see it, but Kelly sees it as she's handing Amy her phone and is noticeably excited. I don't even know what I would do.
I would leave.
I mean, you just say that I was, like, playing around on his Tinder.
I know, that's the thing, though, is all these situations could be avoided by proper communication, and they never are.
So Amy panics again, and she starts to message Kelly as Jonah through the dating app, trying to smooth over the situation and gently reject her. But Kelly just keeps talking to her as Jonah more and more, and Amy finally just tells her that they can't date because he's dying.
Perfect.
This devolves more and more until Jonah and Kelly play a prank on Amy, revealing they figured out it was actually Amy texting Kelly somewhat earlier. Amy later apologizes to Kelly, and Kelly, being the delightful and chill angel that she is, tells Amy, "I should have known. Guys never text that much. You really did me a favor, though. It was a great way to break the ice." Kelly is amazing. I just want to say this. Yeah. Kelly is the sweetest character, and she gets done so dirty by, like, pretty much every other character on the show.
Like, everyone.
And she's just so sweet and pleasant, and I think she's so fun.
Yeah.
She's so charming. So it makes me feel bad for her, because she's, she doesn't deserve this.
I always feel bad for her. It's like nothing is ever going her way.
At that one point in later season, where she's like, God, I fucking hate coming to this store.
Yeah.
I love her so much. Kelly and Jonah start dating, and Amy tries to keep her thoughts to herself badly. In the episode Viral Video, Amy can't understand why Kelly is so popular on social media, calling her videos dumb and silly. Jonah defends Kelly and says he likes her videos, and Amy insists he only likes them because he's sleeping with her. He tells her that's a rude thing to say, and that she's jealous because she could never get so many views if she tried to make videos. Amy bristles at the implication that she is jealous of Kelly for anything, and attempts to make her own videos, but quickly gives up and says she doesn't care about being viral and the whole concept is just stupid. Also around this time, Amy admits to her coworker Dina that she has a crush on Jonah. So, interesting. Interesting.
Good timing.
Timeline there. After it's pointed out to her by Dina that Amy has a tendency to be overly snarky or sarcastic towards Kelly, Amy denies her behavior and says that she and Kelly are friends, and it's just the way they talk to each other.
If only one person is talking to each other like that, it's not the friendship.
I know, and it's, oh my god. So Dina is like, okay, that's wrong, and she's backed up by more coworkers, and then she asks Sandra for some examples because Sandra has an eidetic memory. And Sandra's like, like that time on this date where you said, Kelly, I assume you've been to a monster truck rally. There's another one. Oh, I'm trying to remember it. I should have just written all of them down because they were so funny. Oh, she was like, two people telling you that you look like Reese Witherspoon is not a lot of people.
Oh.
Or responding, did you learn that in pageant school? To basically anything that Kelly says. Pretty rough. Dina and Sandra tell her it's understandable because she's dating Amy's crush, Jonah, but to just be a little more subtle about it. Amy vehemently denies that she is mean to Kelly and goes to find her to prove it. Kelly, who's a very sweet and friendly person, is sheepish when Amy approaches her, and they have a very awkward encounter for a minute before Kelly is like, so do you need anything? Like, why are you here? And Amy's like, oh, I just came over to hang out with my friend. Kelly seems surprised that Amy would call her a friend and points out some of the remarks that Amy has made about her. But Amy assures her she's just ribbing her in a friendly way, and it's just how she talks to her pals. Kelly is relieved and excited, but before they can say anything, a hanging sign falls and crashes into an aisle. And actually later it was two signs, we just didn't see one of them, but another one fell and actually injured an employee. Kelly reveals that she had hung the sign and is worried that she's going to get fired because it's not her first mistake and it was a really, really bad one. When Glenn comes to find out who had hung the sign, Amy takes the blame for Kelly and as punishment has to take a safety training course. So cool move from Amy. She's like, I got you, girl. Just tell them I did it. If only she had stuck to that plan. Because when the safety training and everyone condescending Amy for the falling sign becomes too unbearable, she enlists the help of Dina to play the security footage of Kelly hanging the sign. So the blame will be off of her without her having to throw Kelly under the bus.
Yeah, that's not how this works.
Absolutely not. And unfortunately, Dina accidentally plays the wrong footage, and everyone finds out that Amy and Jonah kissed during the tornado. Things quickly become awkward as the other employees tease Amy and Jonah for the kiss with no regard for Kelly's feelings, obviously. Kelly assures Jonah that it's no big deal. They didn't even know each other when he and Amy had kissed. And as long as he doesn't still have feelings for her, she really doesn't care.
Like a normal person.
Yeah, that's very mature. And, like, I mean, come on. Jonah assures her that even though he had a crush on Amy when he first started working at Cloud9, not only does he not have feelings for her anymore, but their kiss wasn't even a real kiss. Which I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means. Did their mouths not actually touch?
It was his stand-in.
Oh my god.
Amy and Jonah get sick of being teased by their coworkers and figure out that the joke gets less funny the more they play into it. So they start making their own jokes about being attracted to each other. Very good logic. This strategy goes too far when they're jokingly pretending they're about to make out and they accidentally kiss again. And that one actually was
weird.
That one actually was. I can see that being classified. Maybe I do know what he means by a real kiss, but the tornado one definitely was, if this one wasn't, because this one they literally are like waving their hands around each other's faces and like making weird faces at each other, and then their faces hit each other. So if we're talking about real kisses or fake kisses, this one was dumb.
That's but fair. It's like, I think bro. I know what a... That's... Yeah.
Jonah goes to tell Kelly about the joke going wrong, and she is still understanding, shockingly. But I think she's like, maybe he's dumb. I mean, he seems dumb. I've been okay with him being dumb so far.
Maybe he's just stupid.
She is a little more suspicious of Amy and Jonah's relationship, though, their friendship. As an attempt to dissuade this suspicion, Jonah tells her that he wants them to move in together. And Kelly great agrees!
Move. Great move.
Kelly!
Also a great move.
Kelly!
Maybe Jonah, she's dumb. Maybe
I think that's what she's it is. A little dumb, but I love her. She's not maliciously dumb like Jonah. Jonah starts finding issues with every apartment they consider, and Kelly asks if he really wants to move in together or if he just didn't want her to worry about Amy. Jonah confesses that he doesn't feel ready to move in yet, and Kelly tells him she's okay with that and just doesn't want him to do anything to prove something to her.
Solid.
Kelly should be re-examining some parts of this relationship at this point.
You mean, like, the whole relationship?
At the end of season 3, Kelly and Jonah are still together, and Amy finds out she's pregnant again and struggles with feeling like she was just about to get her life on track and that this baby ruins all of her plans. Which is sad.
Yeah.
That's a bad feeling. In a moment of stress, panic, and Adam finding out about the baby and not reacting super well, Amy goes to find Jonah. Adam finding out about the baby was one of the funniest parts of the series, in my opinion. Because he rushes in to her workplace, and he's like, I just got your voicemail. You're pregnant.
Solid.
And it's like, Adam! And then he's like, is it mine? What? Except he doesn't ask it that way. He basically asks, it's not Jonah's, right? Which, and she's like, no, it's yours. And he goes, okay, good. And then immediately he starts making plans with her where he's like, okay, so I'll move back in. I think I can get my stuff out by this time, and then we can figure this out. And of course, we're gonna get remarried, so we should start to work that out with the paperwork. And she's like,
This doesn't change anything.
We're not 19 anymore.
Yeah.
So, we don't actually just need to think that it's the right idea to get married just because you're pregnant. So that was funny. It was very funny.
Like, we did that once and it didn't work out, so like, trying it again.
I know, what's the logic? Oh my god. He was like, well, we had a pretty happy marriage the first time for a really long time, so maybe we'll just like get an extension on that with this second kid. You know? Anyway. Anyway, so she goes to find Jonah, and while they're in the stock room alone together, she decides that Adam's bad decision making is contagious. So she kisses him and then tells him that she's pregnant.
Hmm. Interesting choice.
I love Amy. Not cool moves. Two not cool moves in a row. Not cool. So Jonah is pissed at Amy, both for kissing him while he's in a relationship and for, as he says, waiting until he was in a relationship and she was pregnant before telling him her feelings for him when she knew that he had feelings for her. Although, his defense of her knowing that he had feelings for her was that he was like, well, it wasn't subtle.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, Jonah.
I don't think, like, that is, like, she shouldn't have kissed him. But, like, her being pregnant has nothing to do with it. That was obviously not something that was planned. And we all realize our feelings at different times.
Yeah. And she had a lot going on. Like, Jonah was just a single dude. Amy was exiting the longest relationship of her life from the man with whom she shares a child.
Yeah.
So, Jonah attempts to distance himself from Amy and throw himself into his relationship with Kelly because he's a bad person. And because he's a bad person, he has to meet her parents and move in with her because he's a bad person. Jonah and Kelly briefly live together, but because he's a bad person, in the episode before the season 3 finale, he breaks up with her because he's a bad person.
Why would you, like,
because, like, he's a bad person.
Break up with someone who you live with in their apartment? Like, that just, like, make plans, okay? Like,
it was the most ridiculous. The timing of it, what Jonah was doing and what Jonah was telling Kelly. It was honestly, like, a bit of a disturbing moment from Jonah, where it's like, are you unhinged? Just be fucking normal if you can't do anything else. Just be chill. What's wrong with you? It was horrifying. And she was, like, invested in this relationship.
That's
the
thing. It was kind of like he was misleading her.
Yes, at every single turn. At every single turn, she was like, are you misleading me? And he, misleading her, said no. It was really weird. And it kind of, like, I don't know, it makes you think a little differently about, like, Jonah's character a little bit, because it was just so weird. It was such psychopath behavior. Like, he told her that he wanted to meet her parents and, like, take them out for brunch the morning that he broke up with her. Like, when they met up at their car, when they're about to go home together, she's, like, telling him about brunch places she's been looking at. Like, it's so awful. Bad Jonah. So in the finale, Kelly is rightfully furious with Jonah, and he's still upset with Amy, who's now upset with him for being so upset with her. But they frustratedly work together on a classic Amy and Jonah scheme to expose their company's mistreatment of employees. But at the end of the episode, they've both cooled down, and Amy apologizes for kissing him and asks if they can start over. Jonah agrees to have a fresh start, and then kisses
her. Very fresh.
Then they get carried away, and they have sex in the stockroom. And thanks to a mix-up of wires, due to a live broadcast taking place in the store, the footage of the stockroom is broadcasted not only on every screen in the 1217 St. Louis Cloud 9, but on every screen in every Cloud 9 across the world.
You know, go big or go home. Which they did go home, so.
So logically, except, you know, I mean, logically, they would, realistically, they would have gotten fired. But somehow, Glenn must have called in every single one of his favors, because we start season 4 with Amy and Jonah returning from a 4-month suspension for having sex in the store. And they're also dating now, so that's cool. In the early episodes, we see Jonah help throw Amy a baby shower and get ready for her second child. And when Amy goes into labor, Jonah takes her to the hospital and stays with her. Things get a little awkward when Adam shows up. Jonah, who was helping support Amy's legs, hands one of her legs to Adam and says he's got the other one covered. They both support Amy through the birth, and when Parker is born, Adam high-fives Amy, Jonah, and the doctor and yells, "Team!" Which is actually kind of fun. The doctor asks who's cutting the cord, and Jonah says, "Oh, Adam, you should probably do that." And Adam says, "Yeah, I was planning on doing that, cutting my child's cord. Yeah, thank you, Jonah." The episode ends with Jonah at the end of Amy's bed, watching her and Adam hold Parker before excusing himself so that they can spend time with their son alone. Which is nice. Once again, respectful, aware of Jonah. In the episode New Initiative, Amy meets Jonah's parents when they come to Cloud 9 and realizes that he is still lying to them about going to medical school. She does her best to hide the fact that Jonah is working there, while also getting stories from them about Jonah's childhood, but eventually his parents find out, and they have a full breakdown in the store. It was
that
awkward.
was like the, I cannot. I like watched the episode once and I'm like, I think I fast forwarded through most of it.
It was the most stressful episode. The idea of keeping up such a big lie to your parents
and
for
how, like,
3, not even 3 years, 4 years.
Here's my
years.
Thing is, like, how do you think it's gonna end? Like,
yeah! Oh my god! That's, yeah. Amy catches his parents as they're leaving and defends Jonah and his life's decisions to them, telling him he's a kind and helpful person, and even though he lied, it was only to protect their feelings. At this point, Amy also finds out that his parents thought he was somehow dating Natalie Portman. They realize that was a lie, too. And you see a shift in that moment in Amy where she's like, okay, Joan was lying to these people, but they were also believing it with not much. Like, yeah. They were half lying to themselves. So, that also makes it make a little more sense, I guess. Amy asks Jonah about it, and he tells her he has a hard time talking to his parents about his life because of their expectations of him and because of how judgmental they are. And it is incredibly. In the back half of the season, we find out that Jonah has been staying with Amy most of the time and raising Parker with her. Also, Amy starts pursuing management training courses, gets promoted to manager, and asks Jonah to move in with her since he's been practically living with her anyway, and Jonah agrees, saying it'll make spending time with the kids so much easier.
I wish they had, like, I don't know, expanded on this, because all of this kind of happens off-screen.
I want to see family dinner.
Yeah, and I understand that, the show takes place in the store, but it's like, you know, what was going on with her ex-husband, and,
well, we do find out that he's dating someone new when she drunkenly goes to his house, and she meets his new girlfriend.
Yeah, I don't know, I just wish we had, like, I guess, more context.
Yeah. Oy. I want to see more of Parker, we never see enough of that
okay,
baby.
Okay, yeah, shows hate having babies.
And Jonah's
like,
so
they
good
don't
with
like
him.
Babies.
I know. But it's so sad because every time we see Jonah, him interact, it's just like... In the episode Quinceañera, we see Jonah struggle to find his place in Emma's quinceañera and make several awkward missteps with her. After ruining her reveal, Jonah tells Amy he's going to leave to avoid any drama with Adam or Amy's family, and Amy says she's okay with him going home, but assures him that he doesn't have to and that Emma wants him there. Later, Jonah goes to talk to Emma and apologize for ruining her reveal, and she confesses to him that she had accidentally gotten too high while hitting her cousin's weed pen and is freaking out. Jonah tells her it's going to be okay, and he's going to go get her mom, but she grabs him and begs him not to tell her parents. Jonah sits with her, trying to calm her down, and waves away any other guests who try to talk to her. But eventually, Adam comes up to get her for their father-daughter dance. Emma tries to stand with the help of Jonah, but starts panicking and clutches to Jonah and refuses to let go. Jonah tells Adam that they're going to take a quick spin around the floor. We're just going to, like, squeeze a dance in real quick, I think he says, before the father-daughter. Adam is offended and tells Jonah to let go of his daughter and let them have their dance. And other family members start telling Jonah that he's making it weird and just let her go, dance with Adam. But Jonah refuses as Emma still
Wait,
won't let go.
How did that end? Because I literally can't remember.
They cut to another scene. At the end of the episode, when we cut back, Jonah profusely apologizes to Amy for making a scene and says that he doesn't know why he was so weird. And Amy tells him that she knows Emma was high and appreciates him taking care of her. She also impresses upon him that if any of her children are on drugs, he needs to tell her immediately.
See? Good boundaries.
Which is a good point that I'm glad they slipped into the show.
And communication being
set. Yeah. She was like, okay, that was really sweet and very cute. I actually am her parent. The season ends with Cloud9's mistreatment of employees finally getting too awful, and the employees decide to unionize with Amy's support as manager. Unfortunately, this was the most intense fucking part of the show. Oh my god. Corporate finds out about their plan to unionize and orders a random raid of the store by ICE, and their coworker Mateo is arrested for being undocumented. Oh my god. I still can't watch that episode. Those moments when they're trying to get him out of the store and, like, at one point, like, he's talking to Cheyenne, who's, like, his close friend on the show, and he's like, I'm never going to see you again. I can never come back. Oh my god, the whole thing is just so awful. Yeah. Ugh, and then for like episodes afterwards, Dina, who was on the security cameras trying to find him a route out where he wouldn't be, where he wouldn't run into any of the officers, like, she's just like, she's constantly rewatching the footage and like, oh my god, the whole thing is just so hard. When they visit him in detention, like this whole
storyline is really rough.
It was so much. Oh my god. So season 5 begins with Amy trying to help everyone cope with Mateo's arrest and gathering testimonials for his lawyer to fight for his case. The lawyer tells them the case is looking thin and the testimonials are probably not going to prevent Mateo from being deported. Amy mentions the union efforts and the lawyer tells her corporate union busting is illegal, and if she can prove that corporate sent the raid as a result of a union forming, that he can get Mateo out of detention. She and Jonas set off on getting the proof, Mateo gets out of detention, and Amy starts being watched closely by the district manager, and it's decided she has to take a step back from organizing the union in order to not get fired, and Jonah passionately takes the lead. Which is good for Jonah. This whole season, I forgot to put this part in that Amy talked to him about this, but he's been looking for, like, passion projects because he's not passionate about his job, and so he got really into protesting and he got really into grassroots campaigns, and he just really wasn't finding anything that he could fully get into and be a part of, and so he was kind of being overbearing as a step parent, where she was like, okay, I get it that you really love the union and the union is something that you're very passionate about and the union loves you. Yeah. The union, like, really cares about you and sees you as a parental figure. And I love that you get along so well with the union and that this is all going so great. But, like, it's a little much. It's very funny. Also, good setting boundaries. Because I'm sure that Emma at some point had to be like, Joan, I don't actually need you to make sure that I've done my homework and do my hair in the morning because I am 17.
Yeah.
After Cloud9 is bought by a different parent company, Zephra, Amy starts being groomed by the new CEO for a position in corporate. Jonah warns her that they could just be trying to distract her and separate her from the union efforts, but Amy's offended by the implication that they aren't promoting her for her skills.
Yeah, this is one of those things where I was like, I don't know, it was a very real reaction, but it was also like, Amy, can you just like really quick open your eyes just for a second?
Yeah, it is suspicious timing. Like, I'm sorry. There's a lot of signs pointing to the fact that, and she literally has been promoted before because the district manager at the time was trying to get closer to her and warn her about union efforts. So, like, it's not like it's an unfounded idea from Jonah. In the episode Customer, but I can see also why she's offended.
Absolutely.
We've seen several times throughout the series that Amy's a little insecure about her intelligence and the way that people perceive her and her intelligence because of her circumstances in life.
I feel like I, I don't think I'm an insecure person, but I absolutely believe that I would be just as insecure as her if I were in that position, right? Where it's like, this is not the life that I wanted for myself. I'm not happy with what I'm doing. And people see me a certain way based on stereotypes and misconceptions they have about people in retail jobs.
Yeah. So it's rough. In the episode Customer Safari, Amy and Jonah go to lunch with his parents and his brother Josh. And he has two brothers, but we only ever meet Josh. Amy is caught off guard by their family dynamic. She learns that Josh is a manipulative scoundrel who lied about parties, trashing the house, drinking, and got their maid fired as a child by blaming her for breaking the glass coffee table that he had broken. Not only this, but he constantly and aggressively attacks Jonah for dropping out of school, working at Cloud9, and lying to his parents about attending medical school. Amy tells Jonah that his brother has no right to call him out on these things while he's a total mess himself and got their maid fired over a lie, but Jonah tells her his parents never found out about the maid. She tells him that he has to throw that in Josh's face because he's being such a dick, but Jonah tells her he likes to keep the peace and he usually only sees his family once a year, so they should just get through it.
But again, like, We've talked about this before, right? But like, this is a really good example of a spouse being that, like, being angry on the part of their partner, which is a really healthy thing, like standing up for them, like letting them know, you know, like, I'm on your side. Yeah.
Yeah. But she takes a little too
Well,
far.
yeah.
Because towards the end of lunch, Josh's behavior gets a little too much for Amy, and she blurts out that he's a hypocrite and that she knows for a fact that Jonah isn't the only one who's been lying to Jonah's mom. Jonah's mom, Connie, asks her what she means by that. And after she and Jonah hem and haw too long, Jonah's father, Richard, confesses he's been sleeping with his secretary again, but has no idea how Jonah knew. Amy, shocked, tells them that she was only talking about the broken coffee table that got the maid fire, and a whole scene breaks out as everyone starts arguing. Connie gets up to go to the bathroom, and Amy follows her, apologizing for causing a scene and for Richard's confession. Connie then confesses to Amy that this isn't the first time Richard has cheated on her, and Amy suggests that she sets firm boundaries with him and starts respecting herself more. Connie agrees and says that they should go back to the table. So Amy's like, okay, good, it's all over. We're just gonna awkwardly eat lunch and then leave. But when they return, Connie tells Richard that she's filing for divorce and then
False
leaves.
move.
Firm boundary. I love it. Amy and Jonah leave, and Amy apologizes for basically blowing up his
Yeah, that's
family.
a really good thing to apologize for.
Yeah. Jonah says that it's okay, it was bound to happen eventually, and that it's good that everything is finally out in the open. And I think it's safe to assume that going forward, Jonah pretty much only has a relationship with his mom.
Yeah, probably.
Can't see much reconciling happening after that, much.
No.
The episode ends with Amy back at work and getting a call from corporate offering her a job in California. Amy also is a bit defensive during the season, especially in the back half after Jonah's taken over the union, about Jonah leaving her out of union plans because she's management. Especially when she finds out that Kelly, welcome back, has been helping collect union cards at other stores. And Jonah didn't tell her that. And I was like, she knows Kelly. Once again, Jonah, what was your plan? He doesn't think very far ahead.
He doesn't think. Like, that's what I'm learning from this.
So, like, at one point, like, she's like talking with him and being a little frustrated because he's leaving her out of these plans. And then just Kelly shows up and she's like, here are those union cards that we've been talking about and handing out and planning and organizing around for weeks. And Amy's like, hello, Kelly. What do you mean? So that's not cool. And she kind of goes on a little bit of a tirade where at one point she accidentally accuses him and Kelly of trying to raise her baby without her. I think that's a very revealing statement about how much time she's getting to spend with Parker versus how much time Jonah has, and her being overwhelmed with her work and also all of the things she's doing outside of work and still trying to be a very present mom. So.
But like, I can totally see that, right? Because like, I don't know. She took the like the majority of childcare for Emma's entire childhood, and now things are very different. And even when you have support and like they're really good at supporting you, it's still like again that she we know she struggles with insecurity.
It's true. And it's also interesting because at this point, Jonah is financially dependent on Amy. And it's not really talked about very much, but Jonah goes part-time to help with the union efforts and with
Oh, I
his
didn't
other
even like
interests outside of
realize
work.
that.
And then also when they have to cut hours, Amy feels really bad about taking them from anyone else, and she knows that she can just pay for Jonah's expenses, and he's not paying for rent anyway because he's living with her. So she just takes away his hours and gives them to people who need them. So there are weeks where Jonah like doesn't work or works for one day or works for 4 hours. And so he is the primary caregiver, I would assume, of Parker at this point. So that's an interesting dynamic. In the season finale, Amy tells Dina about the job offer and she asks her if she's, oh, and Dina asks her if she's going to take it. Amy says that she thinks she should, since they're wrapping up the union efforts and it's an amazing opportunity, but worries about making Jonah move to California with her. Dina says he would follow her anywhere, and that a guy like Jonah would probably end up in California anyway.
Which okay, is very but funny. Like, yeah.
Like, I know, to be it's honest. So accurate, and at one point he like buys moccasins to get prepared for the move, and I'm like, see? Dina was right. Amy agrees and tells Jonah about the job, and he's very excited for her and for their upcoming move. In the beginning of season 6, we see Amy start to get more nervous about the move as she watches Jonah prepare. She makes a comment to him about how he's so ready to leave and how he was probably already going to move to California at some point, even if she hadn't gotten the job. He tells her that no, he'd actually always seen himself on the East Coast, but that this was an amazing opportunity for their family. Their family.
Yeah.
Amy seems a little bit put off by him referring to them in that way, in that moment. And which it, like, so, shows.
Like, I don't know.
It's weird.
Like, they've been living together. He's been helping to raise the children. Like,
so here's know. Where I need to interject and point out that America Ferrera. So we're in the beginning of season 6. At the end of season 5, which was in 2019, America Ferrera said she had to leave the show because she has too many other projects that are taking up too much time. She doesn't have time to do the show anymore. They were like, cool, we're wrapping it up anyway. She said, cool, I'll do the last season. I'll wrap up the Amy character. I'll wrap up the show. That sounds great because I do love the Amy character. Everything was on board. Then COVID happens. And making season 6, which was supposed to be her last season, got pushed back by a year. And she was already involved in these other projects, and so she didn't actually have the time a year later to do what she had originally agreed to do a year prior.
Right.
And so she, you know, they were like, well, we'll work with your schedule. What can you do? And she did the first 2 episodes and the last 2 episodes.
Yeah.
So if she hadn't left the show, this never would have happened. They never would have gone through this patch.
Right.
I would say.
Which, I mean, yeah, that's why it's so absolutely bizarre and out of character.
Yes. And it's like there's no way to make it feel natural because it's just not. And it doesn't make sense. And it wasn't supposed to make sense. It's just like something they had to deal with.
Right.
So I can see, you know, if we're really trying to justify it in a character sense, maybe Amy was panicking that she's losing herself. She doesn't know who she is anymore in this relationship. She's not parenting her kids the way she wants to be. She's making so many decisions. She's overwhelmed with her job. She's about to move out of the city that she was born and raised in and has never left. That's hard.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you want to have Jonah there with you to do all that?
I know, that's the thing. It's like, you don't want someone to help support you? Like, that's very strange to me.
Yeah. So, she goes to tell Dina that she's worried about Jonah moving too fast, and Dina rightfully points out that they've been moving pretty slow in their relationship, considering their circumstances, and that Jonah has been co-parenting Parker with her.
Yeah.
Amy tells Dina, Dina is like the voice of reason, and I love it, because she's such a wacky person. If you tell anyone who's just now watching season 1 that Dina is the voice of reason in this season, they'd be like, you're wrong. Or the show goes too off the rails for me to want to watch it. And it's like, nah, just stick through. They change. There's character development. Amy tells Dina that she's panicking because she thinks Jonah took one of her rings to get an engagement ring sized, and Dina asks her if she wants to marry Jonah and move with him to California. She doesn't have an answer for her. So Amy goes to talk to Jonah and tells him that she's been acting strange and apologizes because she got this, quote, crazy idea that he was going to propose to her.
Is it a crazy idea?
Exactly. That's basically that's the exact question that he asked her. And she tells him that she's not ready to marry him. And he's like, why? We've been together for years. And we're co-parenting this toddler. And if she can't commit to them getting married, then he can't really move to California with her, knowing that.
Yeah.
She tells him that she doesn't want to break up and that they can do long distance until she's ready, or they can move to California and, quote, see how it goes. like those words. And Jonah says he's not moving with her. He deserves more and expects more at this point in the relationship than see how it goes after moving across the country.
That's ridiculous.
And he gives her her ring back. So he had taken it to get an engagement ring sized.
Okay, then
which
that's like
so
that even
sad.
Makes it even worse.
Which
because
is
it's like
so
he
sad.
Is looking at this relationship in a different way than her. And I've like, I think I've talked about this before, but it's like, I cannot imagine, like, this is like why I would be wary getting into a relationship with someone who has kids, because I know that I would get really attached to the children. And then if the relationship doesn't work out, like as a step parent, or even like, right, if you don't even get there, if you never get married, but you're still like parenting the children, you're in a more vulnerable position, and you're probably not going to have the same relationship with the kids, if any relationship, if you don't stay together.
I was so upset with Amy when this happened, and my heart just broke for Jonah. He was there when Parker was born. He has been raising,
literally.
He helped name him. He's been raising him and being, he's been his primary caregiver. He's been with this kid all day. He's a full-time parent to this child. And then when he's like, all right, this is all perfect. Now we're moving to a new state together. We can start this new life together with our kids. And, you know, we'll get married. So let me go get this ring, because obviously this is how this is going to happen. And then to just not only get dumped, but to say goodbye to that child and think that you're never going to see them again.
Yeah, and I think, like, the show didn't address this well enough, because, like, I feel like that should have been reflected in the show, and it just, I feel like it wasn't. Like, there was none of this kind of, like, addressing the emotions behind this and how he feels, and it just kind of brushed past.
Yeah. And it was so, that's just so hard to think about. Oh my God. So Amy moves to California without Jonah. We're going to do a quick time jump because Amy's not in season 6. But some notable things that we find out over the season that in relation to our topic is, one, Jonah still lives in Amy's old house for most of the season before moving out to try and move on. Two, Jonah stalks Amy and Emma's social media to find out if she's dating anyone. Three, Jonah entertains asking out a new hire, but then finds out she's gay. But then Jonah dates this girl named Hannah for, like, a little bit, who is very inconsequential. I can't actually remember if we meet her. Yeah, I think she's blonde.
No idea.
I don't know. I don't care about Hannah. Moving on. In the series finale, we see the Cloud9 crew preparing for Store 1217's closure. Amy returns to help close out her old store, and she and Jonah reconnect. They catch up as friends, and Amy asks what Jonah's plans are now that 1217 is closing, and he tells her he's not very sure, but he might move back to Chicago. Amy tells him Chicago is too windy for him, and that he's seeing Hannah in St. Louis anyway. He tells her he and Hannah broke up, and had only dated for like a month anyway. She says she's sorry, and she had no idea that they broke up. But it's pretty quickly called out by Dina, who's standing directly behind her, and who told her that they broke up 10 minutes ago, and says as much. Amy and Jonah hang out awkwardly for a minute before Amy says she has to do something and then leaves. So that's very fun. Fun interactions between Amy and Jonah post-breakup.
Oh my God.
And they've been separated
for
like...
It's like they've never met each other before.
I know. I mean, it is so awkward. Like, they haven't spoken in a year after that relationship that they had.
Which is so strange. Like,
that's insane. Yeah. What the fuck? How do you interact with that? Not like they do. Anyway, they later talk again.
No, this is not a good way to do it.
And Amy confesses to Jonah that she had wanted to text him so many times in California, but didn't know if it would make him uncomfortable. So they haven't talked at all, is what we learned from that. Like,
so strange. Can you imagine, like, you live with someone, and then, for the next year, you literally don't speak a word to them?
Well, I'm also, like, he has Emma on social media. Was he not ever talking to Emma?
Okay, that's separate, though, because I can totally imagine, like, Emma is old enough that he can have a relationship with her.
Yeah, I guess.
Separately.
I hope so. Like,
but not Parker, who he was the primary caregiver for.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The whole thing is just so... Ugh, I hate that they had to do this.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming the show, like, because they didn't have... They didn't want to.
Right.
This isn't like how I Met Your Mother just decided to, like, fuck you.
I still think they could have done it better. Like, I do not think that this was a good way to handle this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for saying this. Ben Feldman should have left the show when America did. It makes sense for their characters.
Yeah.
But that also sucks, because then...
But I can see him being like, oh, I don't want to lose my job.
She would be, like, getting him fired, yeah, because she has to go.
But, like, even beyond that, right, like, if the writer... Like,
ugh, the whole thing is, like...
If the writers had just sat down and, like, taken a few minutes and asked themselves, like, okay, what would, like, a real human person do in this situation? Like, imagining that I'm a person and I'm in this situation, like, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, anyway. So she apologizes for not contacting him. She also apologizes to him for dumping him, but he tells her there's no need to apologize for just not wanting to marry him. She says that's not the case. She did want to marry him, but there was just so much change and decision-making going on, she had gotten overwhelmed and that she didn't know what she wanted then, but she knows now. Jonah tells her that he isn't just some meeting that can be scheduled when she's free, and that he doesn't really know what he wants anymore. And
That's reasonable.
Yeah, definitely. At the end of the episode, they reconvene to say goodbye, and Amy tells Jonah her life was so much better with him in it, and he tells her that he feels the same way. After talking, they decide to get back together, for Jonah to move to California with her, and to get married. Here's where it gets rushed. The series ends with a montage of Amy excelling at her job, Jonah running for city council, them getting married, them hosting barbecues with their friends, and finally, Amy and Jonah tucking in Parker and their new baby, Carter, into bed underneath a ceiling full of glow-in-the-dark stars.
Yeah.
Rushed, but cute. I like where they ended up.
I just...
All of the people I wanted to end up together ended up together, and all the couples I wanted to stay married stayed married, so I'm happy with it.
Like, actually, the only thing I don't like is all of a sudden the new baby. It's like, why did they feel that was necessary for them to have a biological baby in order to illustrate to us that, oh, they're a real family? Like, I did not like that.
No, and it's like, they never even talked about, like, do they want to have kids? Right. Do they want to have a big family? Like
Amy just had a baby. She waited a really long time between the two kids. Like, it just,
And I don't like montage babies.
No.
In general.
Yeah. But other than that, I love the ending.
I think it turned out great.
I'm with it.
Mateo stays out of detention, by the way. I don't know if anyone was stressed out by that moment. Yeah. He ends up with Amy's brother, actually, funnily enough.
Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that.
They do end up together, and they're actually really, really, really amazing together. And it's kind of because... So Amy's brother is a lot like her, but he's also, like, aware of how she can be sometimes, because she can be a bit overbearing and she can be a little bit stressed out at times, which is something that obviously affects her relationship with her coworker very much.
Yeah.
And, you know, Amy and Mateo have always gotten along. He's actually, like, her assistant for a lot of the series because she can pay him under the table, and it's really lovely. And he and Cheyenne and Glenn end up going into business together.
Which, I don't know, that's just so perfect.
Like, I think that's amazing. It's because so amazing.
They all got along, even though they're all so different. Like, it was very clear throughout the show that they had a special bond.
The most amazing thing about this show, I think, is how much foreshadowing they do.
Yeah.
Every single thing that happens in the show, even small things that seem inconsequential, come back later and end up to be foreshadowing. Yeah. So, like, in season two, in the episode Super Hot Store, Cheyenne... gets enlisted by Garrett to go up on the snowy roof with him and fix the store's AC heating thingy. And they get, like, really discouraged. Neither of them knows how to actually do that. And so they're, like, frustrated, and they're up on a cold, snowy roof, and they're just sort of, like, you know, complaining about their lives together for a moment, he and Cheyenne. And then he's like, you know what? We should go into business together. And Cheyenne's like, yeah, that sounds perfect. And he's like, first, we have to travel the world together. And she's like, oh, okay. And it's just like a very sweet, funny conversation. And then in the series finale of the show, four seasons later, it comes, like, oh my god, it's so perfect.
They did a good job.
It's so well done. I love it.
Yeah.
Good show. That was Superstore.
Good show.
Do you want to reveal the super secret Hey Siri season 2 finale that's going to be happening next week?
Oh, you go ahead.
Oh my god, I'm so excited. We are going to be taking a look at the show Community, a little cult classic by very popular creator Dan Harmon. And we're going to be looking at the relationship between Jeff and Britta.
Yes, which is going to be a lot different than today's episode.
It's going to be incredibly different. These are just like two people who slowly find each other and build a life together. And Jeff and Britta are like two cannonballs going past each other towards different ships.
Yeah. But it'll be good. There's going to be actually a lot of material.
I've been watching the last season. When we do these shows, if I haven't seen them in a while, I usually watch the first season and the last season, because that gets me pretty caught up. So the first season of Community, as everyone knows, is incredibly different from pretty much any other season, but especially the last three.
Yeah.
And especially the character of Britta.
Yeah.
Is,
oh my God,
unrecognizable
so
from the pilot and basically the entire first season. Except they bring back a lot of her season one qualities in the final season. And I think, I know why. And it's very interesting. Well, we'll talk about it.
Oh, okay. It'll be a surprise for me, too.
Anyway,
I like
thank
it.
You for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Subscribe. Rate 5 stars. Review. If you have something nice to say. If you don't have something nice to say, don't review, but you can email me at getfucked@gmail.com. It's a real email, guys. I'm not just being snarky. So, thank you.
Please email that email. Because I think whoever does send that email will be pleasantly surprised.
Oh my god.
But don't DM us. Unless you have something nice to say.
Don't DM us. We do have an Instagram. It's at Hey Siri Podcast. You could DM us, actually. I don't know why I said don't.
No, DM us something nice.
Yeah, you could DM us something nice. You could DM us a meme.
Like, DM us how amazing we are and how amazing the
that
podcast
would be
is
great.
And how you listen
yeah.
to it every day.
I would love that. And also, stay safe and stay cool.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.